online, smartphones, DSTV, and 92.7 and 106 FM.
It's just gone 11 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is the Karima Brown Show. You are listening to 702. Former President Jacob Zuma has made a submission on the firing of former SARS boss Tom Moyane, and he's far from happy about it. Zuma believes Judge Robert Nugent was not asked to deal with the individual contracts of employees at the Revenue Service, which according to Zuma means he could never have been empowered to recommend Moyane's axing. Moyane is fighting his dismissal by attempting to have the Constitutional Court intervene in the matter. He has taken issue with having been subjected to both a disciplinary process and the Nugent Commission, which he described as a kind of double jeopardy. This action by Zuma is far from unsurprising, especially since the fact that we heard from Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan today during his testimony that Zuma was hell-bent on appointing Tom Moyane as Commissioner of the Revenue Services SARS, despite being advised that there were more credible candidates suitable for the job. For more on the latest developments and to reflect on Minister Gordhan's testimony as well in front of the Zondo Commission of Inquiry, I'm joined on the line by Paulie van Wyk, journalist at the Daily Maverick's investigative team, Scorpio. Paulie, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Karima, to you and your listeners, and thanks for having me.
Now, we've always discussed the people that are really in President Jacob Zuma's inner circle. The fact that President Jacob Zuma came to the aid of Tom Moyane is unsurprising. The fact that he's prepared to go to this level is perhaps what is intriguing for me. Zuma's submission of evidence comes literally a day after the Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan told the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture that the former president was determined to appoint Mr. Moyane to lead SARS in 2014. What is your take on Mr. Zuma's latest move?
It's a fascinating move to make, but let's analyze it. And I think there are two crucial points to make here. Mm-hmm. Mr. Zuma never signed the Commission of Inquiry into SARS into effect.
Yes.
In fact, I know that he refused the then Minister of Finance, Malusi Gigaba, and Mr. Gigaba was at odds end on how to find a way to get Mr. Zuma to sign it. So in February, Mr. Zuma resigns, and Mr. Ramaphosa becomes the president, and he, in March, signs or initiates the Commission of Inquiry after he fired or after he suspended Mr. Moyane. Now, from a legal point of view, it has nothing to do with Mr. Zuma. He didn't sign the commission into effect. So I am actually astounded that his lawyers can actually attempt to go this legal route. But then the second point to make here is that even if Mr. Zuma did have a legal point to make, it is a mute point because Mr. Robert Nugent or former Judge Nugent, the chair of the commission, made it very clear. The Nugent Commission's mandate is to investigate governance and administration issues at SARS. So that is, or that focuses on why SARS couldn't make target for three consecutive years, the accusations of corruption relating to Bain and Gardner contracts, why the operations model's implications for SARS was highly detrimental, what is the collecting revenue crisis, and so on. Now, what Mr. Nugent found is that Mr. Tom Moyane is a central problem in the governance and administration issues at SARS. Now, according to Nugent, he stands in, or Mr. Moyane stands in the way of any reform at SARS. So, in other words, he's not good for governance and for administration at SARS, and he must go. So, Mr. Ramaphosa clearly only took heed to what Mr. Nugent found. He fired Mr. Moyane, and Mr. Ramaphosa then argued that Mr. Moyane did not have the character of a man who can be trusted to such a high and crucial position. So for me, this is clear-cut, it's simple, and Mr. Zuma had no business in filing that affidavit or any legal standing.
Let's take the first reason that you highlighted why this is important. The fact that Mr. Zuma actually has no legal authority over how this commission came about. If that is the case, and I happen to agree with you, given the sequence of events and of course the fact that he was no longer president, what is motivating Mr. Zuma to make himself vulnerable to being asked why he met with Bain a year before Mr. Moyani became the SARS commissioner? Because those are all going to be material issues that will become germane to his intentions, his motives. We know that Mr. Mabuza, Mr. Moyani's lawyer, cannot answer that question. He cannot answer why Mr. Moyani met with Bain a year before he was actually at SARS to discuss the overhauling of an organization which he wasn't part of. When Mr. Zuma makes this affidavit, he obviously is going to have to be cross-examined about it, and he's going to have to explain Mr. Duma Kandlovo's link with introducing him to Bain, and of course the fact that Mr. Moyani knew for a fact that he was going to go to SARS. Why is Mr. Zuma prepared to make that kind of risk? He's not a guy who generally does that. He plays his cards close to his chest.
Absolutely. I do think this is the wrong legal advice. I'm not sure who gave him the legal advice, but I do think the people who did expose Mr. Zuma to all sorts of uncomfortable questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would be a driving factor in this matter? Maybe the fact that Mr. Zuma is exposed in his personal circle and as well as in his friendship circle to SARS and to any person that will now become the next commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
The next commissioner, especially in an open process, as it should be, may well be a person who really rejects SARS and attempts to do the right thing here.
Mm.
Now, Mr. Zuma has a lot to hide. He and his friends have a lot to hide. And only if you start from the very beginning of how Mr. Moyani was coached, as you said, for a year running up to his employment at SARS, how Mr. Duma and Dover was involved, and whether any money from Bain moved to Mr. Zuma through other fronts and proxies might be very well a question he's going to have to answer.
Now, of course, Mr. Tom Moyani has also applied to cross-examine Praveen Gordhan during the Zondo Commission of Inquiry. And we've also seen, of course, that means he himself will have to be open to being cross-examined. It would literally be the first opportunity that the country would have to be able to hear his side and his version of what went down. I mean, after all, this man described himself as the best SARS commissioner in the history of SARS.
Yeah, that's absolutely laughable. So Mr. Moyani will have to address all the accusations that was leveled against him, especially by Mr. Praveen Gordhan, that he was a crucial player in the Gupta estate capture. Now, I've written about the 420 million VAT refund that Mr. Moyani and his head of legal, Mr. Phil Mokoena, signed off on for the Guptas.
Yes.
Now, and Mr. Gordhan also said that Mr. Zuma was hell-bent on having Mr. Tom Moyani as the SARS commissioner, even though there were about over 100 people who applied for the job.
Yeah.
So Mr. Moyani will have a hard time when he faces accusations and when he has to explain what his tenure at SARS is all about, because he made it difficult for himself. If we only take the small examples that ended off in being very crucial, is that Mr. Moyani always had a very difficult and volatile working relationship with Mr. Gordhan.
Mm.
Now, Mr. Gordhan said before the commission that even small and inconsequential and ostensible petty things like applying for personal leave was a problem for Mr. Moyani. So he just refused to account to Minister Gordhan. Now, Mr. Moyani also signed off on bonuses for SARS management. And that was the story that I wrote about almost R1 million in bonus for his former right-hand man, Mr. Jonas Makwakwa, while Mr. Makwakwa was still on suspension. Now, that act is a financial misdemeanor and it pitted Mr. Moyane against the Auditor General. And that act alone was basis to get him fired. So Mr. Moyane must think very careful about his what he will have to go and explain and how he will expose himself when he do so.
Absolutely. Now, of course, today we saw that Minister Gordon was in front of the commission. There was a lot of slander and defamation happening outside the EFF, making all manner of wild accusations without going to the commission and submitting anything to evidence. And of course, it's a well-known deflection strategy. But let's take a listen quickly, Paulie, to what Pravin Gordhan had to say about the impact of the markets after Mr. Nene was dismissed from his job as a as finance minister.
On Thursday the 10th and Friday the 11th, the announcement of Mr. Nene's removal caused economic and financial market turmoil and a sharp depreciation of the value of the rand, which is an indicator of how the markets feel about both political and economic decisions that are being made in the country. And once markets closed for the weekend, there were ongoing fears that the situation would worsen when the markets reopened on Monday, the 14th of December.
That's, of course, the situation sketched by Pravin Gordhan. I also want us to quickly just listen, Paulie, to Pravin explain that on the 19th of February 2016, a week before the budget speech, he was in given an envelope that was hand-delivered at the time by the then head of the Hawks, Mr. Benningen Hlemeza. And, of course, this was the famous 27 questions that eventually led to him being arrested.
19th of February 2016, that is the week before the budget, and budgets are had on a Wednesday, are delivered on a Wednesday, budget speeches. In the week before my budget speech, an envelope was hand-delivered to the Treasury by General Hlemeza's, or at his insistence, I beg your pardon. This envelope contained 27 questions addressed to me from the Hawks and demanding that they be answered by 2 March 2016. The questions related to the high-risk investigations unit within SARS formed years earlier. Charges against me relating to that unit had been filed by Mr. Moyane on 15 May 2015.
Now, of course, that is Minister Pravin Gordhan explaining the centrality of Mr. Moyane in his persecution as he was trying to do his job. Now, the fact that former President Jacob Zuma has now come out in Mr. Moyane's defense, even though there's no legal basis to do so, points, of course, to the fact that both Mr. Moyane and Mr. Zuma has lots to fear from the testimony of Mr. Gordhan, because he, of course, puts them front and center of the state capture project, Paulie.
Absolutely. And if there's an interesting political dynamic happening at the moment, so if we look at the EFF, who was instrumental in initiating the Zondo Commission, has now also started backing Mr. Moyane, which is the similar line that Mr. Zuma is taking. And the EFF is now paying for Gordhan, for Mr. Gordhan's blood, while Mr. Gordhan is testifying at the State Capture Commission. Now, this noise of the EFF against Mr. Gordhan started when Mr. Moyane was suspended from SARS in March by Mr. Ramaphosa. It also coincided with the curatorship of the VBS Bank in March. The EFF income streams at the time were stopped abruptly. We can see that from where we sit and working on that. And it's clear that that new lines of allegiances have been drawn, and it's not necessarily according to party lines, but more according to political and private financial interests.
In fact, I would argue that it is driven simply by financial interest, because what you have is a situation that it is obviously Pravin Gordhan, when he was finance minister in 2010, who turned off the taps in Limpopo for Julius Malema when he was as influential as he was when he was still president of the Youth League. So that's the one axe that they have to grind with him. The other, of course, is that Mr. Malema's properties were attached so that he could repay his 16 million rand bill to SARS. And then the other thing, of course, is that Mr. Moyani had a very cozy relationship with one of the funders of the EFF, which is, of course, the alleged cigarette smuggler, Mr. Mazzotti. And the EFF is on record as saying that they received the money from Mr. Mazzotti, and they claim that they didn't know who he was and that he wasn't a politically exposed person. So there is actually a material benefit for why the EFF would now act as some kind of proxy, almost, if you like, for the former Zuma forces, because there is, of course, now a confluence of circumstances that brings them into sharp focus, with Mr. Moyani no longer being able to protect dubious business people who essentially defrauded SARS and whom SARS was looking at very closely.
Absolutely. I would argue that a confluence of business interests, as you said, would be the active words here. We must remember that SARS has just received the VBS investigation as
yes.
well. And the public should all put a lot of pressure on SARS to finalize this as soon as possible. So it would be the VBS matter where the EFF is intricately and personally involved.
Yes.
And then it would obviously be that Mr. Moyani had always sort of kept the hounds at bay where it went along the lines of when the EFF received their money, like mm-hmm. as you mentioned, from the alleged cigarette smugglers. And the EFF definitely has a lot to fear from a functioning SARS.
Yeah. Now, let's just come to the question of VBS Bank. Now, the bank is going to be placed under curatorship, despite pleas for the bank to be saved. There's been a lot of talk about how the bank actually enabled the EFF through a set of complicated relationships. Just sketch for us, Paulie, the information that you have at hand and that you've had eyes on, how Mr. Floyd Chivambu and Mr. Malema are linked to VBS. How did they benefit from this relationship?
So I am concluding a new investigation into VBS. We will publish that soon, and then I will be able to speak more freely and openly about what we found.
Mm-hmm.
But it is clear from a financial analysis that money went from the very poor, the very vulnerable in, for example, Limpopo, to VBS through various schemes. Politicians and municipal managers, sort of all coordinated by Mr. Matotsi, who was the chair of EBS,
yes.
Fleeced the bank. It was literally, in simple terms, small depositors, the poor, depositing money into VBS.
Mm-hmm.
And on the bottom, it was the politically connected criminal politicians extracting money from the bank in all sorts of illegal ways. Now, one of the companies, and then the scheme was obvious of using fronts and proxies to funnel the money towards its end destination. Now, one of these proxies was Jamaica, who is the company ostensibly owned by Mr. Brian Chivambu, who is brother of Mr. Floyd Chivambu.
The shell company, where no one is employed, where there's no payroll, you don't actually know what the company does except transfer money from one account to the next.
Exactly. So if you look into the account, you can see that it operates as a hedge fund. And money went from there to Mr. Floyd Chivambu and to a proxy that it seems that also allocated certain money to Mr. Chivambu. And then from there on, there is a company called Mahuna that is a company ostensibly managed by Mr. Pilar or Paleng.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a cousin of Mr. Julius Malema. Mm-hmm. Now, from Mahuna, it's very clear if you analyze that account that money went to the EFF and to Mr. Malema and to certain interests of Mr. Malema. But more detail will be available soon. We're concluding that investigation at the moment and we're almost publishing.
All right, that is where we will leave it. Thank you very much to journalists at the Daily Mavericks investigative team, Scorpio, Ms. Paulie van Wyk.